A gospel is a unique form of communication. Some said it really is a flyer, it's a tear-off sheet, it's a one-pager that's meant to be passed from hand to hand around a community you'd find in the street. Someone has also suggested that a gospel is also a quick news report sent home from a battlefield to tell the local folk how the army is doing. An interesting definition of gospel, isn't it? A gospel, as we read it, is a carefully prepared adventure story lauding the great messianic figure Jesus, God's saving instrument in the world. In the gospel, he cuts a wide swath through the sickness and evil and trouble found everywhere, and the ironclad stormtroopers of the empire have no chance against his power. Now, this Sunday, the Sunday before Lent begins, we are celebrating something called the Transfiguration of the Messiah. Here is the final rally among the soldiers of light, a moment of absolute clarity as to their cause and their resources as together we enter into the battle of Lent and Easter. Great deliverances are here remembered. Fresh pledges are made to the cause. We shall not lose, we say. We shall not die, we say. We shall overcome. That is the message of Transfiguration Sunday. It is dark in the camp, and the sentry walks to light the great central fire. In the middle of the field, it sits and begins to burn. This fire is called the light of Elijah. Elijah's name means God is God. Is that not a great name? God is God. You can do what you like, folks. God is God. And so God is God would stride into the midst of the people to give them hope. Here was a powerful figure standing against the equivalent of fake news and abusive power. The fire began to roar, and the soldiers gathered around shouted, "Elijah is here! God is God! Elijah is here! Let emperors thunder! Let procurators make arrests and take us to prison! Let defections and class deprivation do their worst! Elijah is here!" they chanted. "Soldiers of Christ, arise and put your armor on. Strong in the strength which God supplies through his eternal Son, who in the strength of Jesus trusts is more than conqueror." Charles Wesley, 1749. Perhaps the soldiers see themselves in the role of Elisha on that occasion, Elijah's young protege. He longs to spend every precious moment with his master. So this story cannot be seen as one limited to be about the death of the Master. It is a teaching story, and it brings a gift to those looking on. Elijah is about to be taken up into the whirlwind. Well, that's no surprise. Elijah has lived in the whirlwind of God his whole life through. Why should this moment in it be any different? So Elijah is not shaking the lad loose in order to have a private, quiet death somewhere. Elijah is seeking to instruct the boy in where he will find his help as he grows into his ministry, into his prophecy. And the first stop they make, says the story, is Gilgal. Now, Gilgal was the crossing place through which the 12 tribes of Israel entered the new land, according to the story. And it was said that on the Gilgal side of the Jordan River, there were 12 stones set up in a circle, a stone representing each of the tribes. Gilgal was a place of pilgrimage, and people in subsequent years would go back to the circle of stones and feel themselves anchored in the family of faith as never before. So Elijah is saying to Elisha, it's important to go back in your mind, in your memory, to the place of the family of faith where it all began for you. So I was thinking of Sunday school days. I'm a Sunday school kid. And from the youngest age, where my mother was my first teacher, she was my first convert, I wouldn't go without her, I grew into a senior role, and at age 8, I was running the projector in the Sunday school. I put half the slides in upside down most Sundays. I wasn't technically skilled in those days either, but I was running the projector. And my first minister was the Reverend Wesley A. Morris. When I was 6 or 7 years old, he was the man in the black robe at the front who somehow inspired me to do this. And I am wearing his preaching stole today, 65 years ago. Jesus bids us shine with a clear, pure light, remember, like a little candle burning in the night, we sang. In this world of darkness, so we must shine, you in your small corner and I in mine. Susan Bogart Warner, 1868. Well, the next stopping place was Bethel, where Jacob, after a life of selfish rebellion, was awakened to the presence of God. Surely the Lord was in this place, he said, and I never knew it. And he erected a cairn of stones to remember all who passed by that something remarkable and personal transforming had taken place there. Listen to those who are rescued from alienation, said Elijah to Elisha. You will learn your ministry from them. I received an email this week, along with other folk receiving it, from Dr. John Pentland, the minister of Hillhurst United Church in Calgary. Occasionally, John sends a note saying, I'm working on a certain text, what have you got? So I sit at my desk and I think about what I've got. The text he sent was from Mark. It was the story of a leper who came to Jesus to be healed. And Jesus healed him on the way to seeing the priest. And Jesus said, don't tell anybody about what happened to you. But the man told everybody, so much so that Jesus could find no place where he wasn't swamped with people. What do you make of the story? Said John. Well, I got thinking about it for a while. Here, this leper, and leprosy could mean a variety of things in the ancient world. This person, experiencing distance, alienation, non-being, was suddenly restored to the community. So I wrote back to him and said, if you want to see signs of the reality of Christ, go and meet the people whose lives have been transformed. Talk about them to your congregation. May the congregation realize that these transitions truly happen, and in that case, they will be lined up at the doors in the future. Shackled by a heavy burden neath a load of guilt and shame, then the hand of Jesus touched me. Now I know I'm not the same. He touched me, oh, he touched me, and the joy that floods my soul, something happened to me. Jesus touched me and made me whole. So wrote Bill Gaither, 1963, The Power of Bethel, the personal transforming touch of a living Christ. Then comes Jericho. Jericho is the strong city. It had been inhabited since 7,000 BCE, a city of strong, massive walls and structures, a center of commerce and the arts and theater, the mingling of tribes, innovation, corruption, and grace, all of them together on the streets. Do not fear the city, said Elijah to Elisha. God is in the city. When you're alone and life is making you lonely, you can always go downtown. Just listen to the music of the traffic in the city. Linger on the sidewalk where the neon signs are pretty. How can you lose? Number one song, 1965, Petula Clark. Then the Jordan River. The trickle in the foothills becomes a wide delta opening to the Red Sea. Exploration, bounty, strangeness, and familiarity, the wetland between ordinary and mystery. Learn from this gateway to the whole world, said Elijah to Elisha. She comes sailing on the wind, her wings flashing in the sun on a journey just begun. She flies on, and in the passage of her flight, her song rings out through the night, full of laughter, full of light. She flies on. Gordon Light, 1985. Cross your Jordan into waves of strangeness and expansion and find God waiting there. Then one final time the sparks fly, and they set fire to the grassland around the central flame. A mighty wind whips across the plain, and the whole crowd of waiting soldiers in the dark shout, "Oh, my master, the chariots and horses of God, the flaming presence of God in our midst, the power of the sacred sparkling all around us," they cry. Is that not a scene? What army of brutal repression can ever stand against that in that generation or in any generation? Now, in the gospel parallel to this story, Jesus, the messenger of God, whose name means God saves, has been in the act of saving since the time of his baptism, we are told. As his enemies gather below, Jesus walks on the mountaintop with his intimates, Peter, James, and John. We are there, looking at him through their eyes. They too and we are seeking strength for the battle which awaits us in the season of Lent in the valley below. Tell me the stories of Jesus, I long to hear. Things I would ask him to tell me if he were here. Scenes by the wayside, tales of the sea, stories of Jesus, tell them to me. William Parker, 1885. Symbolism is the key to interpreting the flow of history. Create masterpieces in front of you from the things around you that you may find your way through the things you face. In the portrait of the Messiah on the mountain, Elijah himself appears as fire, wind, and spirit. Those mighty intangibles told in the first story are flooding this scene. Moses appears there too. He is the one who stood against the mighty Pharaoh, the Caesar of his own day. He's the one who led the people from slavery to freedom. There in the tableau, God reveals the heroes, all three of them, who will take us through the battle to come. Above the clouds, the angels are waiting with us, says the message. The church has always been wise to speak in the only way it has known, the language of costly social and political action leading to the cross, and using the power of metaphor leading to imagination. Once to every man and nation comes a moment to decide in the strife of truth with falsehood for the good or evil side. By the cross of burning martyrs, Christ, thy bleeding feet we track. James Russell Lowell, 1845. Without a tale of transfiguration, we are alone before the great battle we all face. We have no friends, we have no visions, we have no place of strengthening or shelter. Without friendship and shared memory, the valley below us is only a place of isolation and death, a poor and hurting world left undelivered. Even as this 200th anniversary year of ours has begun, and we began with such a wonderful start in the middle of January with great preaching and great music and a congregation full of expectant people, we have suddenly turned to meet the winter of our lives. Suddenly, on the pastoral scene, there are people among us who are experiencing sickness and death. Suddenly, the congregation seems to be cold and feeling the chill of the winter. Some among us are sick. Some are dying. Some are longing for love. Some walk in grief. Some today are doubting their gifts. Some fear invisibility. Some are sickened by the state of politics in our midst, and some are aghast that we stand before nuclear threat once more. Some are quietly sorting through their broken field of dreams. In every heart, there is a battle going on in every pew. So here on Transfiguration Sunday, we are building Elijah's fire, and there find Jesus trusting in its warmth and in its light. We dance around it in this good company, shouting their sacred names. God is God. God is salvation. God is God. God is salvation. God is God. God is salvation, we cry. We are part of the gospel narrative. The battle for the quality of the world is real, it's still raging, and we are combatants in it, and this is our strength. Christ for the world we sing, Christ to the world we bring with loving zeal, the poor and them that mourn, sin-sick and sorrow-worn, for Christ doth heal, with us the work to share, with us reproach to dare, with us the worst to bear, for Christ our Lord.